Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNRadio.com/Behind the Badge.
Yo, we about to get the light.
We can't let it play the whole song.
Oh, I just love this song. You're listening to Doma T. Pongo and Griffin Filipich on 720 WGN. This is WGN Nightside, and that is Lauryn Hill's Everything is Everything. That's one of my favorite songs. Now, first of all, I guess we should introduce ourselves. I'm in the newsroom, Doma T. Pongo. You hear my voice Saturdays and Mondays, but you hear both of our voices, me and Griff, Saturday mornings from 10 to 12 in the afternoon on the John Williams Show.
That's right. I produce for John on the weekends, and you're doing news then, so you often chime in, and we both get to talk then. That's how we met.
That's how we met.
We've really only spoken on the air. We've spoken off the air for like an hour.
And I saw him outside of the studio. I was like, that's what he looks like. He looks how he sounds.
That's me.
And Griff, what's so amazing about Griff and I found this out when we do the Vibe Score segment on John Williams Show. And the Vibe Score, they throw topics out there, and we give our vibe on it on a scale from 0 to 100. And Griff and I are always on the same page, especially when it comes to music. Usually start the Vibe Score segment off with some good music.
Thank you.
Yes, you're great at picking the music.
I do what I can. Well, I learned that Lauryn Hill was your favorite artist.
She is.
When I played Doo Wop That Thing from The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill.
And I squealed like a little girl.
Yeah, and you said she's my favorite of all time. Now, she's performing at Pitchfork, as I mentioned when we were doing Crosstalk, on Sunday night. She's headlining. Last act of the festival, and she's playing The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, which is celebrating its 20th anniversary from front to back, or at least purportedly. That's the plan.
And let me tell you why this is such a big deal. Now, if you were around in 1998, Miseducation of Lauryn Hill was one of the most important albums of that year. She's won 8 Grammys for this album. It sold 8 million copies. She was on every best of list that year when it comes to albums. I mean, she was like dominating.
Critical and commercial.
Critical.
It was huge and everyone loved it. Yeah.
Commercial. I'm telling you. And it was that time when the neo-soul genre was just starting to take off. This album was in movies. You remember Sister Act, Sister Act 2?
Lauryn
Hill was in it,
right? Of course.
And she was in the group The Fugees. You guys may have heard of Wyclef Jean. Wyclef Jean, an amazing artist who also is a contemporary of Lauryn Hill. So this album for me in 1998, I was 8 years old and I was already a hip-hop head, a music head, and this was the music I'd grown up on. And so she got all of these fans. This album was critically acclaimed, and then she drops off the face of the earth.
Yeah. And how was that for you as the biggest fan in the world?
As a child, I didn't know what was happening yet.
Yeah. And then you come to find later there was legal battles over the rights for the music and who was getting paid for all of it and all this stuff, and it caused her to withdraw
completely from the music industry.
That was one of a number of things that I think caused that. But so when I was thinking about the question that I wanted to motivate the first half hour of the show, is what is a song or what's an album that people would love to see an artist do front to back all the way through, like she's going to do on Sunday night? And we were talking about it's like a trend that's happening more and more commonly. I was talking to John today about it, and he was mentioning Stevie Wonder was here doing songs in the Key of Life a couple years ago.
Yes.
He did a tour of that. Andre Darlis just mentioned another one. A friend of mine saw Kanye West do 808s and Heartbreak all the way through at the Hollywood Bowl a couple years ago.
Wow.
I remember being very jealous of that. I mean, it's a little...
That's epic.
A little dicier now, but I still would love to see that. But
you're still a Kanye stan, right? Despite all the craziness.
Yeah.
Reluctantly, just as I am.
It's really hard, but yes. It's
Lauryn Hill is another Gemini, by the way. But what's amazing about this too, with all of the legal troubles about who owned the rights to what songs that Lauryn Hill had, she actually wasn't able to perform the versions of these songs as they were on the album. So for the past few years, when people were able to go to Lauryn Hill concerts, they'd hear her perform songs from The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, that seminal album. But every song was either sped up at a different tempo or done with different beats altogether. It sounded crazy. I actually had a chance to meet Lauryn Hill, and at some point through the show, I'm going to tell you this really embarrassing story about me meeting Lauryn Hill. But before we get to that, I want to hear from you guys. 312-981-7200. What is that album that you want to hear performed from beginning to end, and why would it mean so much? If it's a story like an estranged artist who fell off the face of the earth, and you just want to see them come back one last time.
Yep. Well, and it's like very personal. Maybe that's an album that you think you love more than anybody else. But then when I was trying to answer this question for myself, I started thinking, well, I'd probably just pick a legend who I'm not going to ever get the chance to see again. Kesh, you were talking about it would probably be Michael Jackson for you. I mean, how could you not go with...
with the king of pop.
Yeah,
it can be someone dead or alive.
It can be dead or alive.
Yeah, it can be dead or alive.
Oh, okay, dope.
We'll open it up to that.
Yeah, we'll open it up.
Well, and what's your answer to the question? I think it probably is Miseducation of Lauryn Hill.
It is Miseducation, because I got to see Lauryn Hill perform this live, and just because I'm a super fan and I'd read up on it, I already knew that I wasn't going to hear the songs the way they sound on the radio. So I was okay with this sped up, high tempo, strange version of how she would perform these records. So I'm cool with that, but I would love to hear the actual Miseducation of Lauryn Hill the way it's supposed to sound.
That's real.
And then when Jay-Z retired, like in 03, when he fake retired before he came back with another album, I wanted to hear that, but I got a chance to see Jay-Z live. So I think I'm good. I think my bucket list is checked off.
Wow. Well, aren't you lucky?
Yeah, I know. Cashera, what's yours?
Oh, man. Dead or Alive, right?
Dead or Alive.
I would want to see Notorious B.I.G. do the Life After Death album.
Wow.
I feel like that would be amazing to watch.
Why did that album mean so much at the time, though? That B.I.G. album.
Because it was like the album that he had made and songs starting to take off, and then he died. Like, he didn't even get the chance to really perform or even experience the greatness that was that album and what the album still is to this day. So I feel like him getting the chance to actually perform that, and then just everyone from his generation to the generation now, and just that gap in between, would be just a beautiful thing to just witness, and just to feel the energy in that space would be impeccable.
That's a really good one. Griff, what are yours, man?
It's tough. I mean, we'll get to mine in a second. I just got a text from 815, said saw Brian Wilson and the Beach Boys perform Pet Sounds at Pitchfork in 2016, so 2 years ago. Way to go, Pitchfork.
Yeah, and that's a big one. Pitchfork is getting some big. They've got Chaka Khan this year, another Chicago native.
That's right before Lauryn Hill too, so that's going to be the one-two punch
right there
to close the. That's going to be crazy.
That's going
to
be amazing.
I have one of my all-time favorite albums is by a singer named Karen Dalton. It's called In My Own Dream. Does it ring a bell?
Not at all. Not even close. But I know if it's one of your favorites, then it's going to be one of mine.
I don't know if that's true. You push back against the singer-songwriter stuff sometimes.
That's true.
Folky singer-songwriter stuff. I want to play a clip from that in a little bit, but we'll go to Chuck. Chuck, what do you got? Oh.
Let's go to Chuck. Chuck, you're on 720 WGN. What is that album for you that if you heard it, 312-981-7200, you'd want to hear that perform live? You would absolutely lose your mind. What is it for you? Chuck, do we have Chuck?
Hey, there he is.
There he is.
How you doing?
Good. How you doing, Chuck?
Good. I got two artists that are no longer with us, sadly, and that I never got to see. Jimi Hendrix, the Are You Experienced LP.
Yeah.
And Stevie Ray Vaughan, Texas Flood. Imagine them two playing together on the same stage, like back to back.
What songs are on Are You Experienced? Refresh.
That's got his more popular hits like Purple Haze, Foxy Lady, Crosstown Traffic, the song Are You Experienced. Like all the, when you think of Hendrix on the radio back then, those are the songs that they played. So most people don't get into the deeper stuff, but that was his most popular album.
What is it about these artists that are so great, and when they pass young, their music lives on, and it still affects us so crazy? I mean, Jimi Hendrix, he's part of the 27 Club, right? He passed away at 27 years old.
Yeah, in 1970. you know, and this is 2018. Well, look at Elvis. Elvis's estate. Elvis sold millions of albums last year.
Right.
You guys, you know, he's been gone 40-something years. It's just something about the mystique of, well, they're gone. Let's try to. Well, they said Prince, they're coming out with, like, a whole bunch of new music that Prince never released, or they're reissuing all his albums, one of the two I heard. And, you know, he's no longer with us either. I don't know. There's, like, a mystique about it, like you said.
When I was 14 and trying to really hard to get into classic rock, and
thank you, Chuck.
I gave it a really good go, but it wasn't. One of the few albums that I really connected with was Axis Bold as Love. If I was going to go Jimi Hendrix, that is the route that I would take. You could see When Cries Mary. You could see, like, Little Wing, things like this. But, I mean, I guess you can't really go wrong.
My favorite Jimi Hendrix song is probably Hey Joe.
Oh, sure.
Hey Joe.
Please sing some for us.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I forgot. Is this thing on? that was a good one for me.
That's a great answer. Thanks, Chuck.
Yeah, thank you, Chuck. 312-981-7200. You know, if I had to choose what album that would also be, The Roots is one of my favorite bands of all time. The Roots was the first time, that group was the first time I'd ever heard hip-hop and jazz fused together in the form of a live band. There was no such thing as a live hip-hop band before The Roots to me. You know what I'm saying? If you don't know The Roots,
oh, yeah.
The Roots perform, they're the backing band for the Jimmy Fallon?
Yeah.
Yeah, I always confuse the Jimmys, Jimmy Kimmel and Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah, The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon.
Yes.
And The Roots.
They're the backing band. Questlove is one of the best musical minds on the face of this planet. His book is amazing. He dropped a book a few years ago that I read cover to cover, and he is like a historian on Prince and Prince's music. His ear is impeccable. And Black Thought, the rapper, the lead singer in the group, the way he can freestyle, create a whole song from the top of his mind is unmatched. And he does that live on stage. I would love to see them perform their 1992 album or 1993 album, Do You Want More, live on stage. That would just do it for me right there, man.
Absolutely. Well, I want to get more of the answers from you guys. You can text in again. It's 312-981-7200. Song of her album In My Own Dream,
a
song called Something on Your Mind.
And the voice you hear, not the one singing, but the one talking, is Griffin Filipich. I'm Doma T. Pongo. You're listening to WGN Nightside on 720 WGN. And you were right, Griff. I'm not crazy about that one. I'm not crazy.
I feel like, you know, we're going to agree on a lot of things. I got to bring something else. But I'm obsessed with her and that album. That would be one that I would love to see front to back. But we're getting a lot of texts with people talking about artists that they would love to see.
Yeah.
Karen Carpenter, Tom Petty, I saw. But specifically the album, though. Give me that album. People said Tapestry by Carole King. That's a great answer.
Mm.
Songs in the Key of Life, another vote for that, which you had your chance. Off the Wall by Michael Jackson.
Oh, my God. That's kind of easy. You're kind of cheating if you do Off the Wall by Michael Jackson.
It's easy,
it's
such a
good album.
But it's like, it's kind of the right answer, too.
It is the right answer.
It sort of stops the conversation, so we'll left that one aside for a second.
That's true.
Ooh,
but there's two ways to go. One. You go with the legend, or you go with your personal choice.
What do you think? What'd you say, Cash?
I got another one.
What's that?
TLC's Crazy Sexy Cool album.
I could do without hearing that one live.
What? No.
Griff almost threw the microphone at you.
Wow.
You got to defend that.
Defend that, Cash. Or do I have to defend myself?
You need to defend why you don't want to
hear it. You got it.
Thanks, Griff.
Some albums are so big and have so many hits on them that it can kind of... It makes the album too radio for me, too poppy for me.
Okay.
Because every song on that album, it was a great album, but almost every song on there, I heard a million times to the point where I just got tired of them. I got tired of the whole album.
You want to go on like a journey of things? Oh, like be reminded of songs that you might have forgotten about?
I want to be reminded of songs I may have forgotten about. I mean, we're still listening to what was on the album? No Scrubs.
No Scrubs was on Fan Mail.
I'm sorry. See? I'm sorry. There okay, what was on the album, Cash? Bring me back.
Crazy Sexy Cool had like...
Red Light Special.
Yeah, Red Light Special was on it. I think Creep might have been on
Creep was on that one.
What About Your Friends was on that one.
I forgot about
Ain't
that
Too Proud
record.
To Beg was on that one.
Forgot about
See,
that
exactly.
One.
You're already saying I forgot about that
Domus
one.
Domus, he's now like purchasing
album.
His tickets for this hypothetical concert that he said he didn't want to go to a second ago. We got Matt on the line. I want to hear, Matt, what album would you love to see live?
Hey guys, by the way, Doma T, it's me, the Diggable Planets guy from last week.
Oh, Matt, good to hear from you. So Matt is on my side. Matt is a true hip-hop head. When I was hosting last week with John Hanson, he texted in Diggable Planets was a great album that he liked. And I know you've got musical taste, Matt. What's the album for you that you like to hear perform live?
All right, well, you know, I love jazz. Considering they just found a lost Coltrane album, you got to go with Blue Train by John Coltrane. Anybody can play it, but nobody can really play it the way he plays it.
That's very true.
That man had so much skill, so much passion. It sounds different whenever somebody else plays it. With him, it would be the exact same thing that is on that album.
Absolutely. Oh, man, great call. Thank you for that one, Matt.
See you next week, Diggable Planet friends.
Yeah, we've got to talk Diggable Planets next time I'm on here, man. Thank you for your call, man. Thank you for listening. Wow.
That's a great one. And jazz is a good way to go, too, because that's a art form that's like structured around the album a little bit more.
Yeah.
You could go with... Well, then that's what we were talking about. Somebody said earlier today on John's show, somebody said Songs in the Key of Life, which is like a no-brainer. But Roe was saying he was at that show and... Some people around him forgot which songs were on it and were expecting to hear some of the hits that weren't on that one.
Right.
And they're
right.
Getting a little frustrated, didn't realize what was happening exactly. And it's like a fine line. I don't know. It's just like...
It really is. Because I remember Jay-Z walked that line. He had a show that he broadcasted on Tidal called The B-Sides. And I thought that this was such a brilliant concert. He performed every record that was not a hit, but that was a cult classic among his core fans. And did a 2-hour concert performing only the B-sides of all of his albums.
Yep.
And so I kind of get that feel with the Stevie Wonder. He was performing some of those B-sides. You're going straight through, you might not hear that Ribbon in the Sky wasn't on that one, right? So
yeah, and so you're saying like, you don't get to hear Superstition or something like that.
Right.
But it's more about the full experience, not those like moments that you expect when you walk in. So you want an album that like tells a story a little bit more.
Yeah.
Or maybe not. I don't know. But
no, it's true. And
it's like a rounded thought.
And that's what I like about Matt bringing up John Coltrane, because Coltrane was, jazz has this fluidity to it, this freestyle element that you can't recreate. So even the most skilled musician who's learning every note, there's still not that same fluidity that Coltrane had when he first played it, or Miles Davis, Kind of Blue. That's what I'm normally listening to. If you ever see me in the newsroom, I've got earbuds in while I've got my headphones over my earbuds. I'm usually doing news. To jazz, Miles Davis, Kind of Blue, while I'm on the air. So the secret is out, Griff. That's what I'm doing.
You're like Johnny Depp. He was just in that interview saying that he has an earpiece in when he's acting now, and he has either his lines fed to him or certain sounds that'll put him in a mood that'll help him act.
Now, so is that cheating?
It's completely insane, but that's you.
That's you. I guess that's
you guys
me,
have
I
that
mean.
In common. We got to take a quick break and get to news, so we're going to do that. And then we'll be back next half hour. Do you want to do a little preview of that? Or?
Yeah, I'm excited for the next half hour. We're talking to Brian Jenkins. He is the CEO and founder of a business incubator in the city's South Loop on 15th and Michigan. And we'll tell you why that incubator is unique and so interesting when we come back on 720 WGN.
The Blackhawk Summer.
Marion Hossa's contract is off the books.
Low in the bidding at Estroza for Marcus Kruger and much needed salary cap relief. What will they do next?
The excitement starts for the new season at the 2018 Blackhawks Convention, July 27th through the 29th at Hilton, Chicago. Listen to WGN Radio and connect with your favorites.
Keith Seabrook, Kruger,
Kane,
Crawford,
Quentin.
Hear the stars and the strategies as the pursuit for one goal begins again. The Blackhawks Blackhawks Convention on Blackhawks Radio 720 WGN. Our coverage this year is sponsored by Mathnasium. Changing lives through math. Visit mathnasium.com.
Dome T. Pongo and Griffin Filipich on 720 WGN. Griff, you had one more album, I feel like, that you wanted to see live. What
I'm just looking through the text now. Steely Dan is a name that pops up. Jethro Tull multiple times.
Yeah.
People want to go back to the old Karen Carpenter. That's who John Williams brought up.
Karen Carpenter. He talked, and Tom Petty. They didn't
He's obsessed with her.
And we'll end on this one. This kind of surprises me. Sublime, 40 Outs to Freedom. That's what they want to hear.
You got to respect it.
You got to respect it.
Or do you? Yeah, no, you do.
You do.
No, we appreciate the text, and there's no wrong answers here. Keep them coming. I'd like to come back to this throughout the show. There's like a million that you could talk about.
Smashing Pumpkins. There are a lot.
What album is this from? That's what I'm going to see the concert of.
All the way through.
I know it's Lionel. I don't know what album it specifically is. I'm sorry to say my Lionel Richie scholarship. welcome back to WGN Radio. I'm Griffin Filipich. I'm here with Dome T. Pongo until 1 a.m.
Yes, we are. And we're also here with a good friend of mine. Can I call you a good friend?
Absolutely.
Brian Jenkins from Entrenuity. He's spent 20 years in adult entrepreneurship education, and he was seething that we didn't know what album that was. Before we get into what you really know, what album was that, the Lionel Richie album? You look like you had an answer for me.
Now you got me.
Well, we'll talk about something.
I see the song in 1984 or 82, 83. I remember that song. But I'm going to pass on that.
Yeah. This is very Googleable. I'll be right back with the answer.
Very good.
Well, we'll talk about what he does know about. Very interesting workspace, co-working space in the South Loop called Entrenuity. And the workspace goes under the name of Moxie, correct?
Correct. Moxie.
And Brian Jenkins has spent 20 years in adult entrepreneurship education. And how I first heard about this organization, a friend of mine who is an artist said that she had this place that she went to. She works at Moxie, but she also goes there and takes their workshops to learn how to balance her checkbook and her finances as an artist. When she buys the new instruments, what can she write off on her taxes? All of these different things that sometimes DIYers don't know about career. And I started to talk to a few different people who work there. They're out of the Overflow coffee shop in the South Loop. And I was talking to different folks who receive your services, and a lot of them are hobbyists. Maybe they make jewelry. Some of them sew and sell scarves.
Absolutely.
And didn't realize that their hobby could be profitable.
Absolutely.
And that's what you were able to teach them. Tell us a little bit about Moxie and Entrenuity.
Yeah, Entrenuity will be 20 years old next year in 2019. Started out of my passion to work initially with youth on the west and south sides of Chicago. Mm-hmm. And learned that one of the most important things that was lacking in the community was economic opportunity and entrepreneurial resources. So I grew up in Waukegan, Illinois.
Okay.
And had a very good background and growing up and everything, and but the one thing that was always there that I did not realize that was there for others was the ability to work. And so my father, both of my parents, they're still there, always encouraged the idea of work and go out there and do it on your own.
Yeah.
We didn't know it was called entrepreneurship. We just knew it was work. Go earn your own. So mm-hmm. that's how I got involved with this and got involved in the West Side. And been doing this now for almost 20 years, more than 20 years now.
And I understand Entrenuity focuses on diverse entrepreneurs, women business owners, African-American, Latino business owners.
Yep.
How did you end up finding that niche and focus? And what did you see that community didn't have that other business communities did have?
Sure. Access to capital. That's the biggest distinction. Access to capital, access to opportunity. One of the things that's very important to me is to be able to connect entrepreneurs that look like me, that are women business owners, that are black or brown, and give them those opportunities. One of our biggest strengths is being able to connect people to resources that they may not have access to, and that was my story.
So talk to us about some of the workshops coming out of Entrenuity and what we should know about the company and what you guys have been able to do for the past 20 years.
Right. So far on the youth side, we've trained probably about 4,000 or 5,000 youth. About 40 of those youth have actually launched their businesses. Some of those are still up and running. We have some that have been featured on PBS years ago. We've run business camps in the past for 50 African-American Latino students. They went to my alma mater, where I went to graduate school at Wheaton College, brought those students out there, and they learned how to develop apps, how to take the app and turn it into a business model.
Wow.
However, the key thing is in 2007-08, when the market began to crash, there was a new focus on their parents were saying, hey, this is great for what you're doing for my kids, but what can you do for me? So we just start to see a shift take place. We always had students, always had parents in the same classes with their students.
Mm.
But the thing that was really taking place was that they just needed that support. And we wrote a book called Starting Up Now, 24 Steps to Launch Your Own Business. Because I wanted to give a simple guide. That's what it's called, a guide that walks people through the basic steps of what a business plan looks like. So I wanted to demystify the business planning process and not let the lack of having access get in the way of the idea. And so that was very, very important to me. And that's how I got more involved with this.
Now, what's some of the most frequent questions you get, though, from adults who first start on this entrepreneurship journey? Because what's interesting, the fact that parents are in class with their kids, mm-hmm. learning about these things that they might only learn if they'd gone to business school or went and got their master's.
Correct, correct. The most interesting thing is, what do I do to get started? So my favorite chapter in my book is chapter 7, The Big Idea. I say that everybody has an idea. You know, we can get into a group, whether somebody's an artist, whether somebody, you know, is a techie, you know, it all starts with their idea. And so if I tell them, if we can work through that process of what makes your idea distinct, what makes your idea unique, what differentiates you from the marketplace, the better you're able to identify your niche, and then you're able to build the rest of the plan out. The rest of it is pretty easy. The research side, you know, finding out your target customer, you know, your market, all those things are very, you know, pretty easy to do. But once you're able to distinguish what makes you unique in the marketplace, that's key. And so that's one of the things that we really try to work with people to say, what is unique about your opportunity that makes you different than anybody else doing a similar product or making a similar product or service?
I was picking up your book. What's the name of it again, the book?
Starting Up Now, 24 Steps to Launch Your Own Business.
And the foreword by the vice chairman and COO of Walmart?
Correct, yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
Don Soderquist?
Yeah, Mr. Soderquist is now deceased. He died a couple of years ago.
Oh.
But I'm very good friends with his family. His name is a guy on the west side of Chicago named Mark Soderquist. And we've developed a 20-year relationship. And Mark is really all about supporting black and brown-owned businesses to get those up and running.
That being said, when you have people who work in the corporate structure and they're supporting this move toward entrepreneurship, what do you say to people who have already are established in whatever field they work in? They have this side hustle and they want to be a bit more sophisticated about this side hustle, but they have demands
absolutely
of their work jobs. How do they work around that?
I often tell people I was in the same situation. You know, this didn't happen overnight. You know, when I lost my job back in 1999, that's how Entrenuity was birthed. And what I had to figure out was, you know, I still had a passion. I felt like this was not something I was ready to leave. You know, I was like, what do I do? And so I had to figure out how to make my, you know, basically improve upon my product. My product was my ability to teach, my service. And I had to take that model and say, I'm married, have a wife, at that time just two children, and I had to survive. So I had to basically figure out what was my niche in this market. I happen to be a Christian, so I was able to distinguish myself and say I can be talk about Christian values within the context of entrepreneurship education. That was unique and still is very unique in my situation. But that opened up a market in the sense of working with churches, working with nonprofits. But I'm not limited, you know, to only working with churches and ministers. I will work with anybody who's interested in entrepreneurship education. And at that same time, by essentially perfecting my craft, I was becoming a better instructor and developing the tools and the curriculum that I had been working with other curriculums.
Mm-hmm.
But I basically was able to develop mine from my own experience. And in order, and then by doing so, I was like, you know, when I lost my job, it was like, you know what? I can actually do this, not based on just an idea, but based on experience and customers. That was the most important thing, too, is also having customers.
I want to get to the topic we opened up with, talking about access to capital. Sure. And how diverse entrepreneurs have trouble getting that and how you're trying to fix that.
Sure.
But first, before we dive into that,
yes.
you talked about this concept of figuring out what the big idea is.
Yes.
And that finding that big idea is easier said than done. And it can discourage you if you have
Absolutely.
A really simple idea for
sure.
what you think you can make or do that makes money. Like I think Randy, who works in your office,
sure.
she's a jewelry maker.
Absolutely.
So
Absolutely.
How do you work through what that big idea might be? Or how do you take something that's so simple as creating and making jewelry as a hobby
sure.
and make a big idea out of that and a viable business from it?
Absolutely. One of the things that we do, you know, using Randy as an example, if you purchase a piece of jewelry from Randy, no two pieces are the same. You know, she provides, she'll also, you know, she'll do jewelry parties, house party type deals, or she'll bring her jewelry, her product, you know, and do like a jewelry show type deal. But when someone buys her from her, she can customize the jewelry, you know, to a person's, you know, to their outfit, so to speak.
Wow.
She can, and that's pretty unique in this space. And the fact that no two pieces are the same, is one of the things that distinguishes her from other jewelers in the marketplace. So that's, you know, I always, you know, push the entrepreneur, and like, if they're going to make cupcakes, you know, make, you know, what's going to distinguish your cupcakes from somebody else who's making cupcakes as well. And that's very important. And as the entrepreneur finds himself in this market, then they're able to, you know, perfect their craft and stand out from the, you know, their competition.
312-981-7200 if you have a question for Brian Jenkins. You're listening to Doma T. Pongo and Griffin Filipich on WGN Nightside on 720 WGN. Now, you talked about diverse entrepreneurs having trouble finding access to capital.
Sure.
And I understand that Entrenuity is releasing an impact fund pretty soon.
Absolutely.
To make it more, make capital more accessible
Absolutely.
To new entrepreneurs. How are you guys doing that?
Sure. A couple of years ago, a buddy came to me and said, you know, he's a VC and with 20 years of experience, and said, Brian, how can I help you? And my passion always, our tagline at Moxie is coaching, connecting, and capitalizing. The coaching is the training side. The connecting is, you know, the networks and connecting other people to each other. However, the challenge for capitalization is that our goal is to be able to mobilize about $250 million over the next 3 years through the Moxie Impact Investment Fund. Mm-hmm. Impact investing is essentially when funds that can be invested into a company or organization that's also looking for not only the financial return but also a social return. So our goal is to mobilize $250 million over the next 3 years by identifying Black, Brown, and women-owned businesses that are ready and that are investment ready to scale, like take them from the minor leagues mm-hmm. up to the majors and give them access to the opportunity and shared business services.
And you said that capital is the most important resource that you can provide. What do you say to people who feel like they don't have enough time to take their idea and take it to the next level? Because you mentioned you started your business when you recently lost your job.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. But people that are working, I feel like everybody, like you said, has that idea, but they
right.
just feel like they don't have the time to execute it.
Yeah, at the time when I launched, I had already had about 7 or 8 years of experience. Most people launch into a business, in the business that they have experience in. So I'd already been teaching for 7 or 8 years. But one of the things is, like, you have to segment out your time. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we do at Moxie, we have the co-sharing space. So people can come, they can use our coffee shop. We just bought the coffee shop, Overflow Cafe.
And where is that?
In January, in the South Loop, 1550 South State Street. And so the cafe, most co-sharing spaces have cafes associated with them. So you have people that are working on their regular job, but they're also working on their side hustle at the same time. So you oftentimes have to distinguish your time and say, what can I commit in order to get my business up and running? We do that through classes, through workshops, through networks. The last thing that as an entrepreneur starting out that you ever want to do is do it in isolation.
Hmm.
That's the most deadly. Focusing and working on the island just isn't healthy. You need that support from other people who are going through the same experience, or if they've already been there and done that.
Have you seen that's something that entrepreneurs find themselves doing a lot, trying to go it alone?
initially, you know,
what are the biggest mistakes that entrepreneurs make starting out? But, yeah.
Biggest mistakes. There's an acronym that we use called BAM. It's BAAM. And I always suggest this to new entrepreneurs. I don't care what industry they're starting out in. The B stands for having a relationship with a banker. The A stands for having a relationship with an accountant. The second A stands for a relationship with having a relationship with an attorney. And the M is for a business mentor. So I'm a banker, accountant, attorney, and business mentor. Setting up the fundamentals are the most important thing. Most entrepreneurs that we work with that have already been in business, the challenge is finances. You know, how do I set up, you know, what legal structure do I set up? A lot of people go into setting up a legal structure without first creating a business plan. The business plan should dictate the type of legal structure that you're in. So that's something that's very important.
Yeah, well, we're here with L. Brian Jenkins, founder and president of Entrenuity on WGN Radio. We're back on WGN Radio Nightside. I'm Griffin Philippich here with Domati Pongo, and we're joined in the studio, thanks for coming down, by L. Brian Jenkins, founder and president at Entrenuity.
And he's also the founder, or writer, I should say, of Starting Up Now, 24 Steps to Launch Your Own Business, foreword by Don Soderquist, vice chairman and COO of Walmart Stores, former vice president and COO, vice chairman and COO of Walmart Stores. But thank you so much for joining us and talking to us about your journey and about how to get started if you're in business, but even if it's somewhat of a side hustle until it becomes your main hustle and that thing becomes an enterprise.
Absolutely.
And you talk about the resources you provide for diverse entrepreneurs, one of them being the Impact Fund.
Correct.
Tell us about the Impact Fund and how we can apply.
Sure. The fund will go live in Q1 of the first quarter of 2019. But the goal is to provide access to capital, advice, and connections for minority and women business owners. So we want to be able to mobilize about $250 million in Impact Fund investment over the next 3 years.
Well, you can't just gloss over that. $250 million over the next 3 years.
That's the goal.
Okay. So how do you create these relationships then with VCs, venture capitalists? I mean, it's probably easy. Sure. You built relationships over the past 20 years.
Correct.
But how do you get them to buy into these ideas and into some of these businesses? And how can we make sure businesses are ready to take advantage?
Great question. What we're trying to do, we have, you know, certain requirements, and they can, you know, give us a call to find out what those requirements are. But the key thing is what you brought up is relationships. These are relationships that we have earned over time, and they understand the need. They see the need. In 2016, less than 1% of all venture capital, all capital, went to African-American businesses. And in the same year, in 2016, less than 10%. So the need is really there. But the thing what I always tell people, believe it or not, and I'm careful in saying this, it's not always the money. It does the idea work? Is there scale? Right. Is there the leadership that's going to run the company? Those are the things that most people are looking for to be in place. Believe it or not, it's not always the money. I was at a couple of years ago, we were at Tech Week, and I was at a Microsoft workshop, and the presenter there said something I always try to pass on. He said, good money follows great ideas.
Mm.
And what we're trying to find are where those ideas are, and can we give that person that opportunity to get that idea out there.
Where can people find you online, and what's that number?
Sure, they can go to Entrenuity, that's Entrenuity.com, and our number is 312-842-3800.
Entrenuity.com.
Correct.
I'm not even going to try to spell it again. You guys heard him. Brian Jenkins is the author of Starting Up Now, 24 Steps to Launch Your Own Business. They're a local incubator right here in the South Loop on 15th in Michigan, State, 1550 State. South State.
Correct.
Is where you guys can go. It's where Overflow Coffee is.
That's right.
Brian Jenkins, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, thank you so much. And we're back on WGN Radio. I'm Griffin Philippich.
You sure?
I'm not sure of anything tonight. I'm this is a whirlwind. This is my first time hosting, and I'm so glad to be joined by Doma T. Pongo.
Yes, this is amazing. By the way, I'm having a good time, Griff. I really am. Griff and I, there's nothing more fun than getting to know someone on the radio, like as you're working with them on the radio.
Unless you get to know them and find that you don't like them very much.
Yeah, that would suck.
Then that's a little less fun, but I think we're doing okay so far.
I think we're good.
I'm enjoying it very much, and I'm excited to talk about this next topic. It's a movie that went into wide release last Friday called Sorry to Bother You. I want to quote Michael Phillips in his Chicago Tribune review. He's just really quickly. You give it 3.5 out of 4 stars, which is pretty typical for critics. Everyone loves this movie. Mm. And it's directed by Boots Riley. It's a little hard to describe, and I'm going to do my best in the next couple minutes. But he kicks off his review by saying it's a science fiction allegory, though the science fiction angle emerges late in the game. It's provocative, serious, ridiculous, screwy concoction. And it's about, now this is me talking, it's about a guy played by Lakeith Stanfield from Atlanta, among other things, who goes to work at a call center selling encyclopedias, I think. And while he's working there, he finds that there's something he can do to improve his sales. And I want to play a little clip from the trailer that might help you understand what we're talking about here.
Man, I'm just out here surviving. And what I'm doing right now won't even matter.
Baby, it will always matter.
I just really need a job. 40 on 2.
This is telemarketing.
Stick to the script.
Hey, hello. Mr. Davidson, Cassius Green here. Sorry to bother.
Let me give you a tip. You want to make some money here? Use your white voice.
My white voice?
I'm not talking about Will Smith's wife, like this young girl.
Hey, Mr. Kramer. This is Langston from Regal View.
As always, we'll be getting that out to you right away.
You're doing so good with the voice thing.
Holla, 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 holla.
Smith. Oh, yeah. All right.
So that gives you an idea of the movie we're talking about. And I think you can tell that it is not like most movies that you'll see. But I don't know if you caught that turn, though. What happens is, while he's working at this telemarketing firm, Danny Glover, who plays his coworker, gives him the advice, you need to start selling in your white voice. That's what's going to help you go to the next level at this job. And that's where the movie turns on a dime. That's when he starts becoming very successful and the story gets a lot bigger.
Yeah, it turns into a whole lot of other things that we can't fully describe without spoiling the movie for you. It hasn't been out for a week yet, so we can't give you these spoilers, but it will start some very good conversations at home. And I think the one regret I have about the movie isn't the movie itself, but that the trailer doesn't give you enough of a window, in my opinion, into how great this movie is.
Oh, well, that's kind of where I'd want to cut it, because it goes places that I just don't... It's... A lot of people have compared it to movies by Spike Jonze or Michel Gondry, these directors who create a world that's not anything like... They're not interested in realism in any way. There's a scene in the beginning where he first goes to work at this job, and it's kind of a close-up on his face, but you can see what's happening in the room behind him.
Mm.
And it's the lights are just flickering, and there's papers flying everywhere.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
Yes, I remember that scene. Yeah.
I was laughing so hard at that. But it shows you that's kind of the outlook that the movie has on the corporate culture in America, or companies like this, that they look at them and you get the sense that the movie looks at these places and has no idea what's going on the inside. So instead of trying to recreate it, they just show you, well, this is what I think it looks like. There's just papers flying everywhere. And the movie is crammed full of visual ideas like that, where it's just really...
It's like surrealism.
Totally like surrealism. And it's just really inventive. And you can't keep up with all the ideas. You know, there's like 5 every minute of right. just like new things that, and your gaze is drawn in a million different directions. So it's really exciting to watch. But that idea at the heart of it, that in order to be successful, this black man played by Lakeith Stanfield, as we talked about, has to speak in a voice that's not his own. And that's really what propels it for the rest of the movie. And I had a lot of feelings watching it, but I was curious to know, like, you watched it today, right?
I watched it today, and I related very closely to this idea that there's this other persona, this other voice that you have to put on, in order for you to be successful in certain worlds and in certain spaces. You know, Griff and I were getting to know each other just before the show, and I was telling him that I worked in corporate America in Minnesota for a while, and I was just out of college, 21 years old, still trying to find out who I was in truth, right? Really trying to find myself. But then I had to figure out how to be a version of myself to survive in corporate culture and still be myself, but speak properly and move and even make sure that I'm smiling enough and make sure that I'm doing lunch with the right people and that when I'm out with them, that I say the right thing. And it can become very taxing and exhausting. But when you get good at it, it is just, if not more important, as your actual job performance. Like this performance that you do at work becomes so much a part of what it means to be successful in corporate America, not just corporate America, but in several spaces. And, you know, even being here at WGN, it is refreshing to be able to be my whole self, to bring the albums that I truly like to the conversation, and that makes for interesting fodder. And as I was thinking about this idea, I wondered who else experienced this, who went through this, right? Like he talked in the clip, Danny Glover's character says to Lakeith Stanfield, he says, listen, you know, you got to talk white. He's like, not Will Smith white. That's just talking proper, because there's this misunderstanding that when people say talk white, that they mean that you're supposed to be talking properly. No, that's not what people mean when they talk, or nasally. That's what Lakeith Stanfield said. I know it's a stereotype
I mean, but that is the route that they go in the movie. That's how they portray it. They take on these voices. You heard a little bit of it in the trailer. That's just pretty outrageously white sounding.
But like, and Will Smith he speaks proper, but he's still undeniably a black man. There's a piece of himself, and I hope that I have that thing as well, where I can speak properly, but you still understand who I am in my core. But Gail King from CBS This Morning actually struggled with this same thing, which was pretty surprising to me. Let's take a listen to that.
I had to watch it twice, because the first time I'm watching, I was thinking, what the hell am I watching as I'm looking at it? Especially the whole white voice thing, because I've been accused of white voice my whole life.
Okay.
So I found that particularly funny. What's the message you're sending about white voice? And are you getting grief for even talking about white voice?
Well, here's the thing. How Danny Glover's character explains it in the thing is that there is no real white voice. That everything we're doing is a performance, and that in the movie, the white voice that they use is this sort of mythical thing that says everything's okay.
Yes.
And that's like the performance of whiteness for some folks. Is like, even though I'm making $22,000 a year, I'm middle class.
Yes.
You know?
And that was Gail King on CBS This Morning talking to the director, writer of the movie Boots Riley. And I think this is possibly a topic, it might be surprising for you to hear, but it's a topic that's new for a lot of listeners who are white, who don't even know that there's this
this calculation
modulation that you have to do if you are black working in a majority white space, or in any space maybe, but mm-hmm. I think, and this movie presents it in such a bombastic, exciting way that it's like really blows people's minds who aren't familiar with this idea. Do you think that's true?
I think that's why diversity in filmmaking has become so important to people of color, because when you look at the movie like Get Out, it's not this idea that, you know, diverse films, only black people are going to go see them, right? The world will find them interesting. And I hope that people from other backgrounds look at them and say, oh, I didn't even know my black friend thought about this. You know, I didn't even know that this was something that was on his mind. Like, and I think that what was eye-opening to me was something that I understood but was not able to articulate the same way Danny Glover's character did in the movie, where that white voice, that idea isn't actually, that stereotype comes from a group that is advantaged because of the structures of this society and doesn't suffer from marginalization in the same way that people of color do. And what you're really going for is a carefreeness. And I even realized this when I was in Minnesota. You know, we're talking about Minnesota has some of the nicest people in the world. A Minnesota nice thing to me is true, because when I'm coming from Chicago, no matter what race you are, we're a tough city. You know, you don't even realize you're walking down the street with a grimace sometimes. And so, you know, now think about that for people of color, that sometimes when you feel the weight of these systems, or you feel like you're not getting opportunities because of what you may look like, you carry some of that on you. And sometimes it can make you a pessimist, or sometimes it means you don't smile as much. You're not as cheerful as you could be. And you just kind of have this certain disposition that's not as friendly, for lack of a better word, even if you're happy. Like, it's just a certain thing that you kind of carry with you. And to hear Danny Glover say, well, it's not really the voice and the intonation. It's this idea that you're laid back, you're relaxed. After you get out of this job, you're going to go home to your dog. Things are going to be cool. You're not driving, thinking about getting pulled over or what that might look like. And that calculation was something I went through on a daily basis. But my question for you, Griff, is hearing that, you can get to, sorry if I cut
you off. Oh, no, yeah, I was just going to say, it's the lack of extra work that the white voice projects. Like, if you're doing that voice, that means you don't have to worry about how your voice sounds, because having that voice, I don't know. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yes. Yes. It's a default for you.
Right. It's a default. It's another part of my job that I don't have to worry about.
Yeah.
That my voice is not going to be a problem. I know that already. Whereas for his character in the movie, that's another layer removed from who he really is that he has to become in order to do that job. And that sort of disassociation is something that by the end of the movie has really harmed him.
And this is
even though it's helped him get ahead.
Even though it helped him get ahead. Yeah. And this is something that is not a spoiler alert, but at some points throughout the movie, you know, he'll do this voice and forget that he's even doing it. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't even realize I was doing it there. And so you start to lose a sense of, wait, who am I really? What do I really sound like? Yep. Who am I really? Or when you're even as a broadcaster, I don't struggle with this now.
Well, because, you know, I was interested in as a broadcaster, because that's what makes it work in the movie, is that he's making phone calls. So right. It's he's dealing with people that don't have to see him. And I was just, it's an entirely audio medium. So it's much easier for him to step into another identity.
Right.
And that's certainly not what you do on the air here, but I was interested in your relationship to that, just because this is a totally audio medium.
That's a great question. You know, I worked that out earlier in different spaces throughout my career, because I would get asked questions that if I was modulating my voice too much, the answers wouldn't make sense. So if someone asks me something about my background or my life, or both my parents are from Ghana, West Africa, and we start talking about Africa, or we start talking about the music that I love, or the things I may have experienced, hardships as a young person growing up on the south side of Chicago, saying that in a voice that is inauthentic, you can feel inauthenticity over the air. And so that let me know that it wasn't about the voice or how I project or carry myself. As long as my tone is true, and that my diction is on point, and that my truths come through in my conversation, then I'll be okay as a broadcaster. That people will feel like they understand me. And social media has helped so much, because it kind of breaks that fourth wall. Because now, you know, this is an entirely audio medium. With a name like Doma T. Pongo, you can spell it as many ways as you want. I will still come up in Google. Like, people spell my name crazy ways, but I will still come up in Google, and you'll see what I look like. You'll see who I am. You'll find out more about me than I probably even ever anticipated that people would be interested in. Like, sometimes you put in a Google search, if you Google your name or Google a word, you'll see a few words after it that people typically put after it. Like, you know, if I Google myself, Doma T. Pongo, age pops up. Doma T. Pongo leaves WVON, the station I worked at previously. Like, some of these things come up that if I wanted to be inauthentic, I couldn't, even if I wanted to.
Yeah, no, social media totally complicates the whole question. That's what's interesting about the movie, is it feels, I don't know if you picked this up, but to me it felt like a very much a throwback in a lot of ways to movies of the 70s.
Yeah.
And it's purportedly set in the modern era,
yeah,
or maybe in the near future even, but it kind of feels a little bit older. They're watching TVs, and there's only like three channels on TV.
Wow, that's true.
You know, there's not that many cell phones until near the end.
Mm-hmm.
It feels more analog. It feels, and the filmmaking, it reminded me of movies like Network or Putney Swope, like experimental movies from the 70s that you don't get in that register so much anymore.
That is very true.
I think it was kind of throwing back to a time where it was a less complicated relationship, and social media hadn't come in. But it's like a weird concoction in that way. I want to talk a little bit more about it. We got to get to a break, though. So we're going to talk a little bit more about Sorry to Bother You. I've got some music from the movie, too. It's awesome. The music's incredible.
And send your texts in at 312-981-7200. We've got a few questions on the text lines that we'll get to as well.
Okay, great. We're back on WGN Radio.
I'm loving this, man. I'm Doma T. Pungo. That's Griffin Filipich. You're listening to WGN Nightside. What are we listening to?
That music we're bumping with is a song by the band The Coup. Now, it's a band that was fronted by the writer-director of Sorry to Bother You, this movie we've been talking about. He wrote the script for the movie that just came out on Friday. Be sure to check it out. I think we're both giving it a positive review here.
It's really great. Sparked a great conversation about code switching and what that even means. That's the word for it when you modulate yourself in American culture. And we're talking about the premise of the movie Sorry to Bother You is essentially a guy who's a telemarketer who gets told that in order to be successful, he needs to use his quote-unquote white voice. Uses it, becomes very successful. A whole bunch of crazy things happen. And Griff, you made an interesting observation about surrealism in this movie, about it being a sci-fi movie, but also kind of this 70s throwback vibe.
Yeah, and it's a million things. It's also just straight up a comedy at a lot of points too. I don't know, how much did you laugh watching it? I was curious.
I laughed a lot, and I went by myself, and that music gave me a 70s vibe, but then also
is a big part of that. Yeah.
Yes, and looking at Bootsy Riley. In fact, Justin Kaufman talked to Boots Riley on 720 WGN. That interview is on the website as well.
Nice.
But he has these pork chop sideburns.
Yeah,
this big afro. So, you know, for you to catch that really is indicative of what he perhaps was going for.
Yeah. And well, we talk about the social commentary that comes through in the movie and all this stuff, but it works as a comedy too. And I think that gets lost in the conversation. I was laughing through a lot of it. There is a point where it switches and becomes much more serious and disturbing, and kind of takes the jokes that you've been laughing at the whole time and kind of turns them on you, and they curdle. Like, you want to laugh as you have been, but then you start to feel weird about it. I certainly do.
Kind of like Get Out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the genre bending thing where, you know, some people in the movie laughing and other people are wondering, why are you laughing at that?
It's not, I totally agree. The experience you have with it might be similar to Get Out. It's not actually all that similar in tone or in story. I think it's like a completely different perspective you're getting. But in that way, it's true. It's just doing a million things and doing them really well.
I want to get to one of the questions on the text line at 312-981-7200. Texter is asking, is this white voice only an American thing? Is this something that only people of color in America have to think about? And I thought about our producer, Cashera, who's in the studio right now, because she just came back from the UK.
Yeah, I did.
What were some of the observations you made about what life was like in the UK? And do you think that they suffer from this, from having to do this code switch in the same way we do here in the States?
I think they still do it, but I also think they don't do it as often as we do it. Because I feel like, I don't know, when I was in London, it felt like, you know, people, mainly just in the city area, is where I really witnessed this. So where, like, people were just so, like, affirmative in how they were, that they didn't really care about how they came off to someone else. So they didn't really see a need as much to use a white voice. And they more so use their white voices like almost like to be teasing someone. Like, oh, you're not understanding what I'm saying yet. Well, let me put on my white voice. But when I went to like the outskirts, to where I wasn't directly in the city of London, like I was out on like Henley on Thames, which is far countryside. Out there, I heard way more of the white voice because it was like a primarily white area, and I feel like I feel like here and almost anywhere you go, it's almost like the minority group, like no matter what minority group you're in, are the ones that are constantly having to do that code switch thing regardless of what location you're at.
Wow. I think this conversation, I just want to leave it here first. Give it a vibe score, Griff, because let's give a throwback to the John Williams Show. Again, you can listen to us on John Williams Show Saturdays, 10 to 12. But what's the vibe score on this? On a 0 to 100, what do you think?
I'm like a 92. There's a couple things with the last 20 minutes that I didn't love as much as I did the first hour.
Totally agree.
And it, because I think a couple of the movie that he wrote was bigger than the budget he had. I think you get to a couple riot scenes and you think somebody with more money might have been able to execute them a little better. But that's quibbling because this is a must-see, I think. I don't know. What would your score be?
I think it is a must-see. I give it about a 90 for the same reason. Toward the end of the movie, it did go some places where I can see the DVD coming out and there being a few alternate endings. But I do enjoy this conversation. Once everyone has seen it, the conversation will move past just code-switching and this larger conversation about systemic oppression and capitalism and how it affects people of all backgrounds and really different socioeconomic backgrounds and not just color. And I think that conversation, I can't wait till more people see it. When we have that conversation, I think it'd be really interesting.
I need to go see this.
It's good. I need to go see this movie. I can't wait to hear what you think of it. All night after drinking, all night after drinking, hey.
If you're still up, you probably have been, I don't know what you've been doing all night. Hopefully you've been listening to us. This is Doma T. Fungo and Griffin Filipich on 720 WGN, WGN Nightside. And that, of course, is Chance the Rapper. Some breaking music news. New to the newsroom, I think I'll let the DJ in the building, DJ Cashera, break this news.
You know what I'm saying?
Us.
Because we out here right now. Yeah. I'm very excited about this. Chance the Rapper was supposed to drop an album this week, you know, to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Special Olympics, which he's doing a concert this Saturday. Tweeted out yesterday saying, like, you know, no album yet. Sorry, you got to wait a little bit longer. And then out of nowhere, sent out a tweet a couple hours ago, like, 4 new tracks, chanceraps.com. And that's all he really said. But when you go to the website, you can listen to it anywhere. Apple Music, Spotify, YouTube. You know, I previewed the tracks, and I'm here to tell you they are indeed bangers. Every single one.
Do we have that confirmed? Do we know for sure?
I
confirmed it. And then if you go on Twitter, like, these days news article, like, all these blog people are up because it's like, late at night, but they got to get it done. And everyone is saying they are indeed bangers. It's hits. But he is still going to drop an album later on this week or next week. So it's rumored.
So this is not even the album. Now, when he tweeted out, I saw this on the way in, that no album today. I didn't even know he was supposed to drop one today. He said no album today. People were scolding him like his parent. Like, someone tweeted, you know, what happened to accountability, bro? Get it done. Get it done, bro. And I had to read it in that voice.
I was going to say, it's not like he's running for office. But then again, with Chance, that's like not out of the realm of possibility. Like, he's almost there, right? So, like,
pretty close. Pretty
much. We're pretty close to being able to actually say that to him.
I think people are more so just anxious because it's like the first project that he's going to drop since Coloring Book.
Right. And it's been, like, a while.
Yeah, it's been a little over a year.
Now, for those unfamiliar with Chance the Rapper, let's take a step back, because we talk so much about him giving $10 million to Chicago Public Schools, right, him going to town hall meetings and city hall meetings. Let's talk about him as an MC, right? He started with his first record, 10 Day, which was a mixtape, and he recorded that while he was on 10-day suspension from high school.
Right.
Later on, his second project after that, was it Acid Rap?
I'm pretty sure it was Acid Rap.
Yeah.
He came with Acid Rap next, which was my favorite Chance the Rapper album. He had some really dark songs on there. His music is really bright and cheery for the most part, but he has some songs about experiencing violence in Chicago, coming up on the south side of Chicago. He's from Chatham. And then after that, his really breakout album was really Coloring Book. I think there were a few collaboration projects in between there, musical projects in between there, but Coloring Book with some of his major song with Justin Bieber,
right,
Coloring Book. I mean, it doesn't get much bigger than that. And then this project has been long awaited, as he does all of his other endeavors. Now, he's also partnering with the Special Olympics this year.
Yeah. And the subhead of this article I'm reading about the songs that he just released, this came out 30 minutes ago on Pitchfork. It says on one of the songs, he announced that he's the new owner of this publication Chicagoist, which was a partner to Gothamist. You know, there's websites that sort of cover local city news pretty extensively. But remember Chicagoist, but it folded sometime last year, I think.
I'm kind of
getting up to speed again, because that's like one of the big surprises. And in a line that I don't think I can really read in full here from one of these songs for language reasons, but he announces that he's the he bought Chicagoist.
And the song is called, that he makes that announcement on, I Might Need Security.
On I Might Need Security.
Yo, that song, though, just the sample alone, if I could play it, I would. But even the sample of the song that he uses as the under, like, as the background beat is explicit. But it is a beautiful arrangement for a beat.
Now, why this is such big news is lately we've been seeing a lot happen in this news space. You've got several companies that have folded in a recent time, with DNA Info, which was the reporting on the neighborhood focused news outlet,
right,
from which I had a lot of friends who used to work there, and that folded, and hated to see that go during a time when unions, when they were rumored to think about unionizing, it seemed like that's when DNA Info began to fold. And then
they just popped back up too with the
with Block. Oh my God, what is the name of this
is all coming back like in spurts here, but he has a statement out that says, I'm extremely excited to be continuing the work of Chicagoist, an integral local platform for Chicago news, events, and entertainment. I look forward to relaunching it and bringing the people of Chicago an independent media outlet focused on amplifying diverse voices and content.
Wow. So I don't want to use the word competition, because it's always great to have new news outlets, but the name I was thinking of was Block Club Chicago.
That's
which
right.
is a nonprofit neighborhood news site. It was started by former editors and reporters at DNA Info Chicago. But there's this focus on this crowdsourced news model. Do you think this crowdsourced news model is going to last? Is it going to be successful? When you think about community reporting is becoming a big thing, the foundations have given organizations like City Bureau, right here in Chicago, they've gotten up to $1 million in grants to continue this concept of crowdsourcing news from communities and teaching them how to report.
Right.
Is it a sustainable model, you think?
Well, I don't know. I think where the money comes from is what is changing and will continue to change, but it's probably not sustainable through ads, I think, is what we learned when these things folded last year. Although I'm sure, I don't know if that's actually true, but that was the reason that was given for why those things were folding. And you see this at major papers and small papers and websites all over the place. You need someone to fund it with that has money to spare.
Right. Almost
and
like a greater good.
It doesn't kind of live or die on subscriptions or ad-based money coming from ads, because it's not reliable anymore for these sites. Or it's maybe reliable, but often not enough to run the kind of operation that they want to. So if Chance is going to be that kind of financial spearhead for Chicagoist now, I don't know how much money he's interested in putting into it or what his role is going to be exactly.
But I think for someone like Chance, who is very versed in this political space, it's almost like it's more like another outlet for his ideas and ideals. It's like the flip side of when we see conservative outlets who, they have great, large Breitbart, whatever you name it, have large audiences, so they're able to monetize in this way. But I often wonder, when you have someone like a Chance, where you know where he stands on several issues, and you think about the objectivity of journalism, do you think that somehow taints what might come out of that newsroom?
I think that's this is such brand new news that I think that's going to be a question that we'll be navigating as we see it relaunch and see the kind of stuff that they're putting out. But it's on its surface good news. This is something that we didn't have yesterday, and it's on its way back.
Yeah,
it's just crazy that the scope of his ambition is like, everyone's waiting on the album, and then he's like, well, I've been busy doing this other thing.
This other thing.
And then you kind of like, oh, okay, what I was asking for is the album, though.
right. And in the album, you've got this news.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing to see. 25 years old, I believe he is, man. Enterprising a man. His production company is also sponsoring the Special Olympics in a few weekends. I think next weekend. Is it next weekend that they've got he'll be headlining a Special Olympics performance celebrating the anniversary of the Special Olympics. I mean, this guy's all over. The 50th anniversary of the Special Olympics concert Saturday at Northerly Island. And he's released 4 new tracks, undoubtedly going to perform those at that event. Over under, how many people you think will know the words to every song on this album, Cash, front to back by the time he's performing it on Saturday? Just released the album today. What do you think, Griff?
This kind of comes back to our first question that we led the whole show with. I think that's a lot to ask, especially because, well, I haven't heard these songs yet, but Chance goes fast.
He does. So he does.
It's not like it's like the easiest thing to memorize. What are the odds? Is that what we're going with?
Yeah, what are the odds? What are the odds that the whole crowd will know every word? I'm going to say 100%. Because Chance fans are like Michael Jackson fans. Or
yes,
like,
we are.
You're one of them.
Yes, I'm a heavy fan. I've yeah. met this man like 3 different times. I had a smoke break with this man before he won the Grammys. And, like, I stand Chance the Rapper. I can gladly say that.
He is a cigarette smoker. I forgot about that. Yeah, she stands Chance the Rapper. Let's go back to, I'm thinking about albums. Like, he's going to perform this pretty easy to get through 4 songs in full, this project, this EP. But we got people texting their top 10 albums that they'd like to see live, and we didn't get a chance to read these on
Well,
here.
No, yeah, they've just been steadily coming in throughout the whole show.
Throughout the entire show. You want to tick off some of these?
Well, I'm looking. What do you got?
Let me see. I got one here.
People can't get somebody sent their top 10. Thank you to Jerry and Aurora. Top 10. And he's got a lot of Michael Jackson on there. Number one was Elton John, Madman Across the Water. I can't say that I'm familiar.
I was gonna lean on you for that one. I was gonna ask you if you're familiar. I'm not familiar, but just because it's Elton John, I'm gonna assume it's amazing. He's got Elton John on his list twice. Actually, number 8 on his list as well. Elton John,
yep.
Yellow Brick Road.
Beatles, Rubber Soul. And we got another text from somebody saying Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, which is a fantastic answer. It's hard to go wrong with any Beatles. Again, that comes back to you really just want to see them again. You probably would take whatever album you could get.
From the Beatles.
But it's more specifically about that album. But that is definitely one of the greats, so it's hard to go wrong.
We got Pink Floyd, that he also texted in on his list, The Dark. I'm unfamiliar with that one, too.
Dark Side of the Moon.
The Dark Side of the Moon. I'm like, The Dark, I didn't hear that.
I think the text got cut off.
Okay.
I'm hoping that's what...
Yes, it did. It did get cut off.
And Roger Waters was touring and doing that a couple years ago, I think, or maybe it was like 10 years ago now. Hard to go wrong with any kind of classic rock thing, I think.
So thinking about these albums, Pink Floyd, the Beatles, all of these people we're naming, and we're thinking about Chance the Rapper. So if he was in kind of this, what we talked about in the first segment, some of these classic albums and some of these new artists that are making these albums. With the way things are moving now, artists becoming entrepreneurs, doing all of these other things where they're known for more than just their music. Do you think that some of Chance's extracurricular activities will eclipse what he's able to do musically? Because he doesn't have that many number ones. I'm not saying this as a knock to Chance. I love his records. Right. Like, you know, he streams well. His music is entirely free. But often we see him more in the news for making news, for doing some of these community things more so than his music, even though he's performed on Saturday Night Live and right. Jimmy Kimmel and all of these different things.
Well, he had such a great run, too, starting out just as a musician, so universally beloved for a good, 3-4-year stretch.
Yeah.
That I think celebrities, artists, when they get to that kind of place, they do start to get itchy just being pigeonholed into one space, and they want to branch out into... to see what other kinds of things they can do. It just happened so fast with him. He's still 25. He's put out 3 albums. I think when you see other artists do that, that's like when they're really well established decades into their career. But he's done everything so fast and demonstrated a mastery of like kind of whatever he wants to do so quickly that it's just weird to see it happen so fast is the only thing. But so I don't see it eclipsing. I think when you think about other artists who are entrepreneurs, I mean...
Jay-Z.
Yeah, I mean, you could just go down the line. Beyonce.
Yeah.
His wife. I don't know if you knew that.
I didn't know. I didn't know they were together. Justin Timberlake has had some business endeavors.
I'd love to educate people.
Yeah, he bought MySpace.
Yeah, he bought MySpace. I don't know.
How did that pan out for Justin Timberlake?
I'm not back on it. But I think he changed it to like a music streaming website.
No, yeah, they were trying more to pivot to just more music kind of thing, get away from the top 8. I still meet a lot of new people on MySpace. I don't know what you guys
are. Wait, you still have your login for MySpace?
I'm promoting this show on MySpace right now. Like,
as we speak. Wow.
All my MySpace followers, come find me on WWE.
I would go back to MySpace, though. Like, you were able to play music from your page as soon as someone visited. Like, Facebook and Twitter doesn't do that.
Griff has, Tom and Justin Timberlake as his friends. That's pretty much it. And Cash. That's about
Tom
it.
Tom from MySpace has been texting me this whole show. Like, hey, great job.
Thanks, Tom.
Be sure to shout me out before the show's over. So I got it in, Tom. There you go. Why can't you know I got a lot.
That is Chance the Rapper on WGN Radio. You're listening to WGN Nightside. I'm Doma T. Pongo.
I'm Griffin Filipich. And yeah, that's one of the new songs. What's that one called, Cash?
It's called Walla Cam featuring Saba Wee.
And that's one of the four new songs that Chance just released while we've been on the air. I didn't know about it.
It was an hour ago.
1 hour ago. So that's breaking music news here on WGN. And we're just getting our bearings. We talked a little bit about it in the last break. Yeah. It sounds great. It sounds like Chance. You know, that
sounds like the old Chance, man, mixed with some new stuff. Like Chance had a lot of notes from. I got that from Cash, man. That's what she told me.
That's what I tweeted. I literally you just said, tweeted like, that. This feels like acid rap Chance.
You said that in the break. I didn't know you just tweeted that out too. But no, I mean, were you missing that version, that era of Chance the Rapper, that acid rap era?
Missing it. I just feel like. I always appreciate when an artist is able to evolve, but is never afraid to go back to where they started. If that makes sense.
That makes
like,
a lot of sense.
I love Coloring Book, and I love like watching his transition and like seeing the journey that he's on. But it's also like, you know, acid rap is kind of like, acid rap and 10 Day was like the foundation that was able to lead to Coloring Book. So I love seeing an artist be able to transition and, you know, evolve as they need to, but still be able to go back to that flow that is what made them want to start and keep going to begin with.
He tried to goad you into saying something negative about Chance and you didn't take the bait.
That was like, yeah, you did good.
Oh, it does sound like the older stuff. You like that better, right? No.
Not doing that.
Not saying anything negative. There's no way.
She and Chance, good politicians, I tell you. Coloring Book, at times when I listened to that album, I felt like I wasn't old enough. I mean, I was too old to fully like, and I'm not even 30 yet.
What does that even mean?
It just felt so, some of it felt so young. Like,
what?
It felt some of the music felt a little, no, I don't want to use a negative word, like juvenile, but it felt a little, I don't know, man. It felt like my nieces should listen to, which is great because when you have nieces and nephews, I got 6 nieces and nephews, 5 nieces, 1 nephew, and I love hip hop. But I can't play hip hop in front of my family sometimes. And so when you have an artist like Chance the Rapper where I can play something and my kids can dance to, I can play Sunday Candy and my nieces can listen to it. Shout out Jamila Woods. It's a great thing. But when I'm by myself, I'm not listening to Coloring Book and the song with Justin Bieber. You know, okay, not the Biebs.
You can skip the song with Biebs. But like Same Jugs was good. No Problems with 2 Chainz.
With 2 Chainz and Lil Wayne.
So up and down, it's great. I mean, it's just about picking your personal favorite, but he hasn't put out anything bad yet.
Come on, Griff. Talk some sense in the domain.
Right. We got to take this off the air. I can't even look at you right now. Right. No.
Between the TLC talk and the Chance bashing.
Yeah, TLC.
I'm
like,
going to get hate mail in the text.
We almost watched at the beginning of the show with that one to begin with. So,
make it easy for me. I just sit back and let you talk, and then I connect all outraged. It's a good dynamic we've developed. Over the past 2 hours, but we gotta wrap it up now. We got about a minute left, and then we gotta take our final
goodbyes.
Oh no, we got a couple minutes to wrap up, but the texts are still coming in about what album you'd like to see up to top to bottom. Shannon texted in; she would love to see Beastie Boys' "License to Ill."
Nice,
one of their classics.
License to Ill, nice, a classic. Oh, we're still getting texts from our original conversation as well about the code switching. This story, you mind if I share this story? You want to share it on the other side of the break?
No, please. Yeah, no, we don't have another break.
Yeah, so Sandy from South Harbor chiming in. She said, I used to work at a makeup counter at the Water Tower downtown. I would use different accents, specifically a British accent, and would make more sales by a landslide. If I used my everyday voice, customers were less excited, and I clocked out, leaving with less sales in my pocket. Harsh reality, but on the flip side, I have a pretty cool British accent. Wow.
That's fascinating.
It goes back to the discussion we started off with about Sorry to Bother You, about what code switching means. And ironically, we don't see it as prevalent, at least from Cash's anecdotal point of view in London. But here, that British accent equates to having intelligence and being able to make a sale, making you more interesting. So I don't know.
Well, that's just anecdotal, too. But it's not just. She sort of subbed in something different for the typical white voice that we talked about in Sorry to Bother You. It's almost not even like what you're switching to. It's just the fact that you make the switch.
Yeah.
Which is...
That's very true.
Interesting. But British accent, though, that's tough.
The next time we do WGN Nightside, we're going to interview Eminem and see if he had to code switch.
Wow. That's who you pick?
Eminem, man. That's close as what I can think of.
We're setting our ambitions pretty high. We'll see if he's willing to come down this late.
He doesn't even follow anybody back on social media. I don't think he's going to even respond to
that's this. Your litmus test. That's how you're like, I don't know. Have him on. He's one of those pompous people that refuses to, like, they follow one or two people.
Right.
He doesn't even do that. So I'm like, nah, dude.
He's not coming on our little show.
Can't trust you.
It was worth a shot. Listen, you guys can keep the conversation going on social media. Tweet us at WGN Radio. And if you missed the first half of this, we'll be up on WGNRadio.com. My name's Doma T. That's D-O-M-E-T-I. I got to tell people how to spell it. And that is Griffin Filipich. How do you spell Filipich? Or Griff Phil. G Phil. We gave him a
how
name.
How much time Patty, you got? We can spell the whole thing. F-I-L-L-I-P-I-T-C-H. You can find me on social media if you so choose, I suppose.
I guess.
I could hit this hard, too. Griffin underscore Phil, F-I-L-L, on Instagram, although I'm posting on Instagram.
He's much like Eminem. He won't follow you back. He just followed me today.
We'll see. I'm on Twitter. I post more on Twitter, but Instagram is a tough one. We were talking about this. Domity's so active on Instagram. It's hard to keep up.
He is.
You make me look like a recluse, like a hermit.
Same. Same. And like posting is like part of my job. Like my longevity depends on
it. Am I really that insane on Instagram?
Like every day I see you post.
Every day?
Oh, you're killing it.
It's a good thing.
Thank you.
You have a lot of followers and they're very active with you.
You guys follow me on Instagram. Domati underscore. DOMETI_. Send that hate mail to my inbox because I bashed Chance and TLC. It's perfectly fine. I can handle it.
This is jealousy you're hearing. Nothing more.
That is awesome.
No, this was great. And I look forward to seeing you. I'll see you on Saturday.